All right, welcome to the Taylor Wade Hoffer Show podcast, designed to help all. We all got struggles, we all have problems, and we all come out of it a little bit different. So this is how to overcome bad shit and get what you deserve in life. Today in the hot seat, we have Kenneth Stevenson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Very excited for our interview. Quick intro. She is a 14-year broker, been in the real estate game for a while. State 28 Real Estate is hers that she's a broker of. We were talking about this pre-show. She is like a family tree of brokers. How many brokers do you have in your family?
My mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, my oldest niece, and soon my younger niece. So yeah, I married into the real estate family. So I've only been a broker for a couple of years, but I've been in real estate now. This is my 14th year. So, and I owned my company. This is my 7th year.
And just started a brand new company.
I did. Yeah. I just started a second company for Real Referrals at the end of 2023, which is I think we're going to talk a little more about that with the NAR settlement developments and opportunity there for some agents.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get there for sure. So what part of Greater Houston are you taking care of is primarily up north, right?
Well, I try to stay north of I-10, but me personally, for my personal business, because I do live in Montgomery County, I'm back of the Woodlands, Magnolia area, but we have agents, we have multiple agents, so we have agents in different parts of Houston, and then we also have an agent in the Central Texas, San Antonio, Austin region, and then we have an agent in the Corpus Christi, North Padre region as well, so.
Yeah, I sent some of your stuff, some of the multifamily listings that you have to a guy yesterday, actually.
Oh, good, thank you.
Yeah,
to make a deal.
You're welcome. He's fired up. So we'll see. So and then you got a partner. You got Scott.
I do. So when I started my company, I was not a broker yet. I was still working on my broker license.
Yeah.
And so Scott was the broker of record for me to start State 28 Real Estate. And when I got my broker license, I asked Scott to stay because two brokers are better than one, because
100%
contracts get written all hours of the day and night, as you're finding out now, Taylor, since you got your real estate license.
Yeah.
And so it's important that one of us be available all the time, especially because I like to cruise. I come in here today, there's a cruise ship down the road, and I was like, ooh, don't threaten me with a good time. Yeah. I like to cruise.
Super tempted.
Yeah.
Yeah. When's the last time you went on a cruise?
The last time was in October. And the next time will be in next month, in May.
Yeah, I was about to say, I feel like I've heard you talking about it recently. What?
Yeah, I have three booked right now.
So. Three on the books. Yeah, one of my best friend's dad's Diamond, whatever, cruiser. Yeah.
I'm not Diamond yet, but I am Platinum. I'm well-established Platinum. My mom is Diamond, and it's her fault that I cruise like I do, and probably her fault that I gamble like I do, so there's that.
There you go. Well, you have lots to do on the boat, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Do you remember the Carnival boat that got stuck out there like 10 years ago or whatever?
Yes.
My friend's dad was on that one.
Really?
Well, because, you have 3 months, three cruises booked in a row.
Yeah.
That's kind of how he rolls.
They retired that boat finally. We cruised on that one, I think, 4 or 5 times.
Oh, wow.
We never had any issues on it, thank goodness. But I think they retired it finally and took it to the Boneyard last year or the year before. Norwegian had a crazy event just in the last couple of days. Did you see that in the news? They left a couple in some country in Africa. Good Morning America, they're all over all the news, and the news is like feeling sorry for them. They were an hour late. They did a private excursion, got back to port over an hour late, and they got left. And the ship like gave their passports to the local authorities and left them there. And they had to bounce through multiple countries to catch back up with the boat, because it was like a 3 or 4 week multi-country African cruise. Anyways, I just have a hard time feeling sorry for them. I'm chronically late, and I know cruise ship time does not play.
They don't play.
So, no.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I've been on 6 maybe, and yeah, same thing. Like, I'm like, that's one thing I'm not going to screw with.
Yeah, no. Not trying to get stuck in another country.
I mean, I had a buddy in somewhere in Mexico with a bucket of beer on the beach, and he was trying to talk me into it. I'm like, we brought nothing. And he's like, it doesn't matter. I think it was Cancun. And he's like, we can fly home. We'll figure it out. I'm like, I'm not doing that, bro. I was like, I'm not leaving all my stuff on the boat.
No. They have, I think every cruise line has somebody in port that is a employee of theirs that lives at each port, that's job is to assist you, like pointing you in the right direction to get you through if you need visas or whatever to get you home, but not they're not helping you with the money part of it. That's all you. And I mean, that's like a $10,000 mistake I'm not trying to make.
Yeah.
I'll just be on time sometimes.
Yeah. So, all right, last cruise question. We'll get back to it.
Okay.
When did you start your passion? Like, when did you start going on cruises consistently?
Short answer, after my dad died. So about 14 years ago, my mom decided that she's not leaving us any money. She decided that she would rather make memories with us than leave us anything. So we were like, okay, we're down with that plan. So she took us on our very first cruise. Me, my now husband, our kids and my sister and her husband and their three kids, and mom took us all on our first cruise. So I did not think I would like it. I'm a little bit claustrophobic, and I didn't think I was going to like it at all. And like I said, now I'm pretty platinum. I don't know how many cruises I've been on, 20 something.
Yeah.
A lot.
There's a lot of peace and serenity there.
COVID was rough. I was on land for a long time.
Got to go. Yeah. Yeah. Love the water. We're in a shout out to Hook South Studios, by the way. These guys fish a lot. And so I got a love for the water as far as fishing and all that. So thanks for having us, man. Definitely appreciate it. All right, back to business. All right. So before you got into the real estate world, you were oil and gas for a while, right? 10 plus?
Yeah, 10 plus. Don't age me specifically. Yeah, no, right. I'm just kidding. I don't care. About 15 or 16 years total. But yeah, I grew up in East Houston. So where I come from, we didn't have to go outside really to know which way the wind was blowing where I grew up off Highway 90, because we lived like in the middle of Lyondell and Arco to kind of the south of us, the Champion Paper Mill just to the east of us, and the garbage dump, the big garbage landfill just to the west of us. So literally, we prayed for northern wind year round where I grew up. but basically, if you didn't go off to a university somewhere far from home, you figured out how to make money out of the smokestacks that we grew up, you know, under, really. And that's what I did. So my mom was in education. My sister went into education. My dad was more in the manufacturing side of oil and gas. And I followed my dad into the oil and gas industry, but I was more on the downstream side. So I was turnarounds and expansion project, construction management. Those are the professionals that I placed mostly for. Well, I started out with laborers like boilermakers and pipe fitters, and that was the best, honestly. That was way more fun than the higher level recruiting later. It's a different class of people, probably the class of people I'm most comfortable with and grew up with the blue collar folks, and they're really grateful for every job. And that was enjoyable. Later in my oil and gas career, I was more high-end plant managers, you know, design engineers for expansion projects and procurement managers and things like that.
You said high-end recruiting in those positions? Were you like headhunting?
Yeah.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Okay.
So I was a headhunter and then HR manager and benefits manager. Recruiting, way more fun than HR.
But both
paid really well. Well, yeah, because when you're giving people the jobs, you're the matchmaker, putting the good folks with the good jobs. The HR is more, you're only talking to them when they're getting fired. It's nearly not as much fun.
Yeah.
But both paid really well. So I was really set, in that career. I mean, I think I did a great job and established myself kind of in a man's world back then, and was rocking it. So it was, things were good.
Respect. So, and then you, what made you know, take the turn to real estate?
So two things. One is obviously I married into this real estate family. And my husband's been in restoration for over 20 years, almost 25 years, I guess. So he's dealt with real estate professionals, commercial and residential, for 25 years of his career. But his mother being a broker, his sister being a broker, like I said, I married into a real estate family. So that opportunity presented itself at a time that it ended up being really necessary for me to make a change. And that change was available to me. So that was awesome.
And then I didn't even know this about you until you got here. We were talking about, you know, he had a son named, you know, Chase, if I can talk about him.
Yeah, he's an adult. I give you permission. Yeah.
Shout out Chase.
Yeah.
But we're about to talk about you. But you know, there's a, you know, custody battle, which I went through. So I'm like, okay, near and dear to my heart. That's a big deal. And I mean, yours lasted quite a while.
Yeah, we had two big rounds. So so Chase is 22 now, and he's awesome, and he's grown, and he's doing all the adult things. We're very proud.
Good.
But he's the baby of our three. So I have a daughter and a son that I made, and then Hank had his one son. And when Hank and I got together, he was right at the beginning of what developed into a really nasty custody battle over Chase. And that was a really stressful time, and he wasn't in a position, he really wasn't in a position to sacrifice as much time and energy or money as it really was going to take to succeed through that whole scenario. So I was, and I basically switched careers so that, you know, everybody says, get your real estate license, set your own hours, work when you want to.
Yeah.
I love it. I know, that's so funny. But that was the draw. I was like, okay, this is going to be awesome. We'll save so much money in paralegal fees, which we did, because I assisted our attorneys through the whole thing. We still spent tens of thousands of dollars in 5 years. But I completely changed careers. I mean, I completely started over, had to build myself from scratch in a whole new industry. Simultaneously, we were fighting for custody of Chase.
You're an agent.
Which we won.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, we did. He went to high school with Brayden, my son, which they're stepbrothers, almost as comical as that movie. But
wow.
They're a year apart. They're both kind of nerdy.
How lucky are you?
But adorable.
That's hilarious.
They're fun.
Yeah, I bet. Give me a story of, okay, if they're like stepbrothers, I know you got like 100 stories. So a little bit about their back and forth.
My favorite story of them was like their first Easter together, 8 and 9 years old. And they're now almost 23 and just turned 24. But their first Easter together, I'll never forget. My mother-in-law and I sitting on her back porch, you know, drinking a beer like you do on Easter. And they were crouched down at the fire pit. And what they had done was split open one of my father-in-law's like practice golf balls. And they had it in the fire. So it's like heating up. And 8 and 9 years old.
Got it.
These little, in their little Star Wars t-shirts. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're crouched down at the fire. And one of them's like, you know, that looks like lava. It looks like it's the way it's heating up. It looks like lava. And the other one's like, no, you mean magma. And then the other one's like, no, but it's actually poly whatever. And the other one's like, no, it's actually polyethylene. And they're both like, if we were enclosed, we'd be dead by now. And I'm just literally sitting on the porch like, I'm not even qualified to hang out with these geeks at all at 8 and 9 years old. They're so nerdy. But thank goodness they're both really smart and adorable, and they're going to do great things. So.
That is too funny. Well, congratulations on that. That's fantastic. It sounds like a hard, long, you know, fight situation, but kudos. The Chase case.
Yeah, 1 out of 5.
Victorious.
Do not recommend custody battles. Work it out. Don't have kids with the person you can't work it out with, because, man, it sure is expensive and hard on everybody. And if you end up in that situation, all I can say is truly try to co-parent versus parallel parenting. Parallel parenting is really, really hard on the kid long term. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I know. That's a whole another podcast in itself. It's near and dear to my heart. I love making content about that, because there's a lot that goes into it, you know. Yeah. Parallel parenting. I've heard that, or just, you know, working with the other side. So, all right, moving on. Let's go business. So, Pandora's box, let's open it up. There's a lawsuit in the real estate world. Can't go anywhere. Everybody's talking about it. May as well talk about it also.
Yeah.
But you know, before it happened, like, you had already launched something. And was it December, or was it a little early, like October last year, when Four Real Referrals birthed?
Started the concept September, October. Yeah. As you know, nothing happened super, super fast with Trek or the Secretary of State of Texas.
So
it was December. It was right at Christmas time, just, you know, skirt in by the deadline of the end of the year,
right.
Launching Four Real Referrals, which is a secondary brokerage for me, but it's not a practicing brokerage, if you will. It's a place where agents can hang their license if they want to stay active and be able to be paid, legally compensated, and paid commissions for referrals, while not being active members of HAR, TAR, NAR. They're not needing to use the MLS right now. So I really started that because real estate was slow a little bit for a lot of people. And, you know, even myself, I think I went a couple few months without a check, in between checks in 2023, which was, hadn't happened to me in a long, long time. You know, the year end, I think number was fine, made up for it. But I think a lot of agents were really struggling between checks in 2023. So that was a motivation for me to launch that and give even some of my agents within State 28 a place that we could move their license over to if they weren't going to be able to pay all those dues. Because, you know, they hit us with those dues every year between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
And I've never been able to figure out with all the tech that we have available to us now why we don't pay those fees on our, like, license anniversary dates. We're so advanced, but yet we're not that advanced. So everybody pays it Christmas week. Cause yeah, everybody's got that money Christmas week, right? Every year.
Yeah, I know.
So
Merry Christmas from Har and Nar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Here's your invoice. We'll be taking that right out of your account. So, that was really the motivation, was, to give some of our agents and other agents a place that they could park their license if they needed to, wait until their next opportunity or their next, commission check to be able to make those dues at the beginning of the year, not have to go inactive,
right,
and then not even be able to help friends and family who, you know, need a referral.
All right. I have a question for agents that might be somewhere else. So what is the difference between, like, just a referral that you're passing? Okay. I get it that you're saving on the fees, right? But say you're with KW, you're on a split. If they do a referral, are they paying out of their split on the referral because they're with KW?
I can't speak on behalf of KW, but I will tell you that that varies greatly from broker to broker.
Got it.
So, most of your big box brokers do take splits on referrals. They take splits on everything until you cap, most of them, from what I know. And I did hang my license with a couple big boxes before starting my company. Most of your boutique brokers are not going to do that. They're either going to flat fee you or take a lesser split or no split when it comes to referrals.
So got it.
That's been my experience.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, I was just curious. So that's fantastic. So, and there's probably a ton of agents that, you know, or I mean, even more so when you first told me, I thought it was fantastic. And that was way before, you know, the shit hit the fan. And so, and it's not even happening. Well, what is it? July? Is that when the final judgment is supposed to happen? Like, nothing's even happened yet, but the world, you know, people are freaking out.
My opinion, that settlement is not going to get approved by July. There's already some pushback on changes and revisions that need to be made in there. I don't think that's going to happen by July. I think maybe by year end, we're going to see some changes and or have that settlement approved. I do think there's changes coming. I do understand the fear factor that there is, but I don't think the sky is falling. What I do think is that Pandora's box has been opened, and that's frightening, and it could become a lot more frightening depending on how it all plays out.
All right. So a couple questions around this. So, you know, the seasoned agents that I've talked to have been, you know, less concerned than obviously, you know, the rookies for, you know, I mean, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. You take it in stride. No real estate deal is the same. You know, you're veterans in the game. So give me an example of a conversation you've had with a concerned person about it, if you've had any.
I've already experienced it from a buyer side and a seller side with my client.
Right,
so
great.
I had
Perfect.
A seller who straight up, we just relisted their house. We had had it listed in the fall. They took it off the market through the holiday season and, you know, kind of the cold season, literally and figuratively in real estate. And then we were getting ready to go back for the hot summer sales.
Sure.
Getting ready to relist it. And
busy time.
Great relationship with this client, called me, not our first deal together at all, and called me from where they live out of state and said, oh, even the local news where they live is just this settlement, and sellers are going to save so much money if they wait and sell after the settlement. And I had to have that conversation. Called me and was like, hey, so if I wait to let you relist our listing in July, then we're going to save like $10,000 or $12,000, right? Because that's what they're telling me on Channel 2 News here where I live. And I'm like, wait, what? No, that's not true at all. So just talking through it, very logical client. Again, not somebody that it's our first deal together. Once we talked through it and she understood it, it was a no-brainer. And how I basically explained it to her was, you've never been required to offer a co-op commission to the brokerage that's bringing the buyer. That's never been required by the seller. Now, our MLS has required that the listing broker offer at least $1. You could not put zero in that spot on the MLS. It had to be at least $1, which we saw some builders do $1 during the pandemic, which we all enjoyed thoroughly. But yeah. But that was, there was a minimum. You had to, couldn't be zero. You had to put $1. So broker to broker, there had to be an offer of at least $1. Now, nobody wants to work for free. Buyers, agents do a lot of work and expect to be compensated for their time equally or I guess adequately, right?
Yeah.
So it's more common than not, the practice has been to do a split of 50-50 or somewhere around 50-50 of whatever the listing broker's charging to the seller for the listing. They're offering half of that or close to half of that to the brokerage that brings the buyer. So a couple of things to remember. Number one, that's broker to broker payment. So nobody without a license can pay anybody with a license. Nobody without a license can receive money. So a seller was never paying the buyer's agent. And if you really think about the way that it's come to be customary in our country, all across our country, and especially in Texas, has been that co-op brokerage commission is paid from the listing broker to the buyer's broker. So they're charging X percent, whatever that may be, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, commercials even higher, to list the listing so that they have enough room within their fee to offer that co-op commission. Now, the argument about this lawsuit came about because you had specifically four big box brokers who consumers, sellers, claimed their agents had not been properly trained to present the listing agreement correctly. That when they got to page whatever of their listing agreement in that state, which it was in Missouri, so I don't know what page it is on their listing agreement, sorry, but on their listing agreement, when they got to the line item where you fill in the blank for co-op commission, yes or no, you're offering it, and this is how much, out of the listing brokerage commission, failed to adequately explain that was negotiable, that those were negotiable line items in the contract. Now, I would argue that those consumers were smart enough to sell their house, smart enough to call and interview agents, and signed a document that they later claimed not to understand that literally says in bold at the bottom above the signature line that if you don't understand it, you need to consult your attorney. Yeah. So that would be my argument, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm a realtor. So as it stands, they proved their case that those agents were not presenting those listing agreements properly. They didn't cover that information properly, or at least they couldn't prove that they did. And the companies couldn't prove that they trained their agents to do so. So the class action proved its case that couldn't be disproven. So here we all are now with where do we go from here? And the fake news in the media, I hate to use the term fake news, but it is spouting off that, you know, buyer's agents are going to work for free. Nobody works for free, man. Like who? Nobody's going to work for free. That's not going to happen. So what's going to happen now if the settlement gets approved? The changes that are on it now are buyers won't be able to look at a property without signing an exclusive buyer rep agreement first. So if you're, you know, my buyer Taylor decided today, hey, I think I'm going to buy a house this summer. I'd like to start looking. And you call me up. Hey, I'd love to work with you. Not only we've always had to present the information about broker services that says this is what real estate professionals do. So you need to know that. You've always had to initial that on our first meeting that leads to business. However, now you have to sign an exclusive buyer rep agreement. So you can't just shop around yourself until you get serious or until you narrow it down to a certain area. Zillow and Realtor and Trulia, I mean, I'm not singling out any one of them, but where consumers have gotten to where they think they can do all the things, no, you can't do all the things anymore. We're going to limit that.
The buyer or the seller thinks they can do all the things?
No, the buyer.
Okay.
The buyer. Everybody thinks you can just buy a house on your phone now, right? Because it's 2024. Yeah.
Zillow.
All this technology. Sure. Yeah, no. So that's not true. And I mean, of course, in Texas, most of those sites, and again, not singling out the one or anyone, but most of those sites are very inaccurate on value comping anyway in Texas, because in our state, real estate sales are private. So, it can't be publicly shared what a house actually sold for, only what it was last listed at, and or its tax appraisal is public record. So those sites have never been accurate in our state anyway, but now you're not going to be able to have the access. So you'll have to sign an exclusive buyer rep, and that in the buyer's agent's commission has to be pre-negotiated on that buyer rep agreement. So you want me to show you a house today, Taylor? That's great. We got to figure out, I got to explain to you what I think I'm worth as a buyer's agent. You have to agree to that. We both have to sign it. Now we can go look at houses. Great. So there was a battle previously in court that shook out to where the co-op commission offered in the MLS became public. So right now, this minute, if you look up even on Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com, Homes.com, or HAR, you, the consumer, can see how much co-op commission is being offered, whether that's 2%, 2.5%, 3%, whatever that amount looks like. You can actually see that as a consumer right now. So this settlement proposes that that goes away. Not only does it go away where the consumer can't see it anymore, it goes away where the agent can't see it anymore. So your buyers...
Is that happening?
Yeah, that's in the settlement. That's part of the settlement. Is that...
Why is nobody talking about that? That's the first time I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal news for agents.
Right. Well, so no, here's the thing is it creates more work for everybody. So this settlement proposes to create more work for both sides, because if I'm a buyer's agent now, if you're my buyer,
yep,
don't you want to know how much difference there is going to be in the cash that you're bringing to close from the different houses that I'm showing you when we're looking at them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big
right.
factor.
I mean,
big factor.
Obviously, you don't go look at cars and be like, show me all of them. Let me pick my favorite and then tell me what I'm paying. That'll be fun. That's not how life works.
Yeah, yeah.
So the consumer has a right to know. They have a right to that information, to know that they've got to bring an extra 1% of cash to closing to cover the buyer agent rep commission that they agreed to before they got to look at houses, right?
Okay.
So, without that information being available to us through the MLS that we paid to get that data through, now we've got to pick up the phone and call each other. We've got to have increased communication with each other to obtain the information for the consumer to relay it before we can even go, okay, so do you want to look at this one then? Okay, because, you know, here's the deal on this one. This one is going to cost you a little bit more when we go to closing, because you're going to be covering the difference. You have a right as a consumer. Now, the objective I understand of the lawsuit and the settlement, I understand the objective of that piece of the settlement is to stop agents from steering. So that the motivation is to stop me from not showing you a
right.
house that's
Understood.
Not paying me what I think I should be getting.
Right,
okay?
right.
But the negative, the actual consequence of that is now I got to make the phone call to find out for you, because you still have a right to know as the consumer, because we have a pre-signed agreement that says you're responsible for the difference. So now I've got to get that additional information for you before we hop in the car, and I've got to wait on the response from the listing agent as well. So it also slows things down, because as you know, some people are more responsive than others. On the listing side, I think about it from a broker standpoint. On the listing side, if buyers are scared into trying to save a buck and going into real estate transactions and trying to buy more houses without representation because they think they're saving money, which is not true at all. The buyer's not going to save a dime. The seller is not going to give you 3% off of the list price of their house and lower the values of homes in their neighborhood because you choose to come to the transaction without representation. What happens in that case is the listing broker keeps all of the commission for dual agency or intermediary, which is in Texas, it's intermediary. We don't have dual representation, quote unquote. But the listing broker side now keeps all of that money. You don't save a dime. As a buyer, and as a seller, you're also not very likely to save any money. The amount of money to be made doesn't change. Home values don't change as a result of the settlement. What changes is that you're creating more work on both sides of the transaction. So buyers trying to save a buck are going to start calling the listing agents directly. It's your listing. You come show it to me, right? Okay, so that co-op commission that we've been offering to encourage first of all, to expand exposure, to get more exposure out there, get more agents to bring buyers to your listing to check it out when they're in the neighborhood showing another one, right? So we've put that out there as a marketing tactic. That's been part of our listing package, is offering that co-op compensation. So buyers trying to save a buck, now the listing agent, I can't list my house and hold an open house and maybe go show it one or two times. I might have to go show that house 40 or 50 times now, because you've got these buyers that are, the sky is falling and I'm going to try to save a buck because CNN told me. And so now that listing, my cost of business goes up on going to visit that house an extra 40 times beyond what I would have just with the original listing pre-meeting, listing agreement meeting, listing prep, photo shoot, open house, you know, maybe one or two showings, appraisal, inspections, all the other final walkthroughs, all the other things that a listing agent does already accommodate. You add potentially 20 to 40 or 50 more visits to that house on those listing agents. That's time, that's fuel. So you've increased their cost of doing business for the agent. But wait, there's more.
Here we go.
So as a broker, my cost of business stands to go up as well on the listing side. Because if I've got to deal with all these unrepresented buyers and serve as intermediary, it sounds great. It sounds, you get to keep all that commission. Your brokerage and your agent gets to keep all of that commission that you set as your listing fee. Yeah, that sounds great. Until the lawsuits come rolling in from all the buyers who didn't understand, quote unquote, what they signed, like the sellers in Missouri. All the buyers that didn't have representation. See, the sellers in New Jersey that started this or bought into this class action lawsuit, they had representation. We're promoting right now for buyers to have none.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen is you're going to have a bunch of buyers that are after the sale are going to be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that I was going to be responsible for replacing the water heater if it busted. Well, yeah, you bought a house. That's welcome to homeownership.
Yeah.
You're going to have buyers that are going to go, I didn't know. I didn't understand. I didn't have an agent, and the other agent should have explained this to me. Well, the other agent represented the seller. They didn't represent you as the buyer.
Right.
So then, you think there's a few commercials, and I don't know if they're in your feed, being in real estate, they're all in your social media feed for class action lawsuits. My 22-year-old, the baby boy, actually got junk mail at our house a couple of weeks ago. If he had sold a house in the last 5 years, he's probably entitled to like $19 out of the settlement. Yay.
Yeah.
He hasn't sold a house, sorry. But think of the increase in the ambulance chasing attorneys to gobble up those consumers who feel like they weren't treated fairly in their real estate transaction over the next couple of years. And wow. Then what happens is our E&O insurance goes through the roof, especially if we're doing intermediary and there's not representation on the other side to absorb half of the liability of the transaction. And now my cost of business has gone up drastically as a broker as well. So you increase the cost of business, cost of doing business for the listing agent and the listing broker. And you think they're going to work for less? No, they're not. In fact, you could see those fees go up. I wouldn't be shocked if the new norm 5 years from now is that those four or five big box brokers are charging 8 and 10% to list your house instead of the OG average 5, 6, 7.
Sure.
You got to do what you got to do. It costs money to do business, right?
I see boutique brokerages coming out with that probably pretty quickly. You know, I mean, because there's going to be a lot of places to pivot and make moves and make this profitable. It's just going to be how they figure out how to do it. So I have a question. What would be the disadvantage of a seller, right? That instead of listing, you know, with what's going on, but they're going to, you know, for sale by owner. What would you tell that person?
Man, it's just about liability. I was probably the worst consumer in real estate before I became a realtor myself or a real estate professional and then realtor and then broker. I lost a house foreclosure in the early 2000s after my divorce. And looking back, I should have never moved out. Like, I could have so saved that house. I was only a few months behind, but I believed every letter they sent me. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, young single mom, I was like, oh my God, like they're going to come at 3 a.m. and take me and my kids and all our clothes out to the street. I didn't know.
Yeah.
So I was probably a really, really bad consumer myself. But what I've learned so much over the last 14 years, or this being my 14th year, is why real estate professionals exist, why our industry was created, why it exists, why the Texas Association of Realtors is over 100 years in existence now. We are protection. If you think that your real estate professional is expensive, if you think it's expensive to hire a real estate professional to list your home or to represent you on a transaction to purchase a home, wait till you have to pay that lawyer. Oh, that realtor would have been cheap, 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 comparatively speaking. And that is literally why we exist. We exist to protect you from lawsuits, and on both sides. So, And same thing with the title insurance, kind of where title ends up being the middleman in the transaction. That's another layer of protection. So in an ideal real estate transaction, your buyer has representation, your seller has representation, the title company also has the title rep, title insurance. There's seller title policy, buyer's title policy, right? So if something goes wrong after the transaction, what is the chain that gets followed? Buyer has a problem. Didn't know they were going to have to pay for that hot water heater or whatever. There's an easement they didn't know about, something they think wasn't disclosed properly, whatever the case may be. An old lien that comes up from the 80s when they go to put a pool in. There's all kinds of crazy things I've seen in real estate. So, mineral easements. That's why I'm in Montgomery County. So I see that. Yeah, mineral easements. There's all kinds of things that can come up, right? So in the perfect transaction, the way it's designed, the way it's been designed to flow, the buyer's first point of contact, their first point of liability, is their agent, and then their agent's broker, and their broker's E&O insurance. So if there's a problem, that's your first stop, right? Yeah. And then from there, it would escalate to title didn't uncover this lien from 1972. We need to go after, and then it may be then that the title's insurance policy, they file a claim, and then that pays out the difference. They help overcome the issue, whatever, and then it's resolved there. If it can't be resolved there, then the next level of protection goes to the listing broker, the listing agent, and the listing broker, right? So real estate professionals exist to protect the consumers. And so the irony for me, and I'm not going to get political party-ish, but I will say that I was floored, no matter party regardless. I mean, the president of our country gave a speech a couple weeks ago in Vegas where he said he's calling on all real estate professionals. He said realtors, actually, but we're realtors.
I hate that.
He said, I'm calling on all realtors to drop their commissions, reduce their commissions to protect the home buyers. Newsflash, okay, for him and everybody else that can hear this far and wide, here's the newsflash. This settlement does the opposite of that. You create more work for the professionals on both sides. Nobody's going to be offering to do that for less money. That's not how things work. You can't increase my cost of doing business and then ask me to do it for half price. That's not real life, okay? It doesn't matter what business you're in. That's not real life, okay? So what's already happening, the brokerages who got us into this mess, who failed to properly train their agents on how to deliver a listing agreement, right? Oh, they're training them now. Let me tell you, they are rolling out some training right now like wildfire. And you know what they're training? They're training tiered commission structures. So now,
tiered. Like a drop down.
Tiered. Yeah. Sorry, my redneck accent.
No, excuse
my hillbilliness. tiered. Yes. Tiered. The T-I-E-R.
You get it.
Tiered. Okay. So they're doing a tiered structure of commission offerings. So now you can get a discount. You want a discount? We'll give you a discount all day long, buddy. So I didn't ask you if I could say bad words, but I'm going to say a bad word.
You're good.
Just a little one. So they're going to offer you a whole ass package at this number.
Okay.
They're going to offer you a half ass package at this number. Yep. And they're going to offer you the dumb ass package at this number down here. Pick which one you like, sir. Whatever you like, we'll do for you. No problem.
Yeah.
And so what happens is the consumer gets less protection for those dropped fees. Oh, what a win. No, it's not. The only people that'll win in the long run of that are the same people who won in this lawsuit, and that is the attorneys. When are we asking them to take a pay cut?
Yeah. Fair question.
Right?
That's wild.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on it.
You do. That was amazing. I've had a lot of conversations. That was a really good one. A really good take on it, you know, because
it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I see a lot of things that could go really badly.
So, okay, try this on for size. So I was having a conversation, and this has been what a lot of people have been talking about with, you know, just the surrounding the conversation. Well, you know, there's going to be, you know, they don't know in depth as much as you do. So they're like, you know, there's going to be a buyer's agent that's starving out there, and they're willing to work, and then be like, hey, look, I get it. All good. I'll do it. They'll take it, right? They'll just say, I'll take it for one. But I mean, not without, you know, the hole and the half and the dumbass package, like, they're not going to get that, because that's tiered, that's preset.
If they're with one of the big brokerages, they have guidelines they have to follow. I mean, we're not employees. We are all 1099. We are self-employed. And that's something else most consumers really, really need to be educated on, is that your real estate pro is a business owner. And it doesn't matter what logo is next to their name on their business card, if it's a boutique, if they're independent, or if they're part of a big brokerage, they are still self-employed. And the bigger brokerage they are part of, the bigger their business expenses are to have that logo next to their business, next to their name on their business card, and whatever resources go with that, which ironically, the biggest one they push is training. Oh, you know, when you go through real estate school, anybody who's gotten their license, in your family or friends, ask them when they were in real estate school, how many big box brokers delivered lunch while they were in class at real estate school and tried to recruit them. And their whole push has been training. We're going to give you so much training. And clearly this lawsuit painfully proved that that wasn't true. So I think that you can get training, and you're finding out now as well. And I think you already knew even before you got your license that real estate is about relationships. Being successful in real estate is about relationships, and your relationships with your best title partners and inspection companies, appraisers, and lenders. There is so much training available. I tell my agents, like, if you can't find a free legal update near you within 60 days before your license renewal is due, you did not try. You did not open your email. You did not even try.
Yeah.
And that's just the legal updates. But I mean, there's constantly, every single one of our business associates and business partners are trying to come up with new and creative ways to build their relationships with us and our agents. So we've got continuing education coming at us from every direction in your neighborhood. Like, you know, who cares if you're with ABC brokerage, or whichever brokerage that you're with, it might be 30, 40 miles from your house for your broker that's in your region. Whereas how many title companies are within 5 miles of your house that you could have knocked out all your CE in the last 6 months, and probably most of it for free? Like, if you didn't get it, you weren't trying. So, so to me, that was my experience. That's what I found about big box brokerages. And that's why I decided to go boutique instead, because I think it's more important to offer mentoring on, I never got a training class, continuing education, or the initial mandatory education that really readied me for my first negotiation, that really readied me for a day in the life of what real estate actually looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the legal terms, yeah, but I can tell you this, in my 14th year, I think I have yet for anybody to ask me about, like, an estate or what type of ownership they have in their estate. What do you know the legal term for the ownership? If you know, we used to be married, but we're still cohabitating, or we inherited this property, but there's three of us, you know, how that breaks down. Like, no, I swear, in my 14th year, and I've even done quite a bit of probate, no client has asked me yet if I knew the legal term for their type of ownership. And that was probably 30% of the questions on the real estate exam.
I know.
So I don't think it really adequately prepares you for real life real estate. And that's how I try to run. That's kind of my motto, you know, real mom, real wife, real life, realtor. But I mean that. I really try to, Scott and I both, we try to mentor our agents in a way where I can tell you every one of my agents, and I hopefully will never grow too big to be able to accommodate this, but every one of my agents wrote their first contract sitting next to me or Scott, not on the phone, not Zooming, not FaceTime, and not email it to me and I'll proofread it for you and send it back with red X's on it like your first grade teacher. Like, no, let's go through this together. You need to understand why you're filling out each blank and what your options are, and making sure that you're explaining each one to your client, whichever side you're on. So really try to go that extra mile. I try to leave each of my agents smarter for every interaction. I try to leave each of my buyers and sellers smarter for each of our interactions, where even if they're moving out of state and I might not never get to work with them again, they'll be a better buyer or a better seller for the next agent they work with because they worked with me. That's kind of my goal.
100%. Kenna, you're a wealth of knowledge. 100%. So if anybody has any questions for her about joining her current brokerage as an active agent, or if you're not active, but you know, like the idea of being able to, you know, benefit from on the referral side and not pay all the fees and the dues, I guarantee you, if you have questions, you should definitely ask. How can people get a hold of you?
So my cell phone is always on, 713-585-5838. No real estate pro can be successful without answering their phone. If I am with a client and I don't answer, always text me and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. But I'm reachable, and so is Scott. State 28 Real Estate. Again, we're in multiple markets. I'd be happy to talk to anybody interested in joining our brokerage and our traditional brokerage. And then For Real Referrals is new. We do have a few agents on board now on the roster. But if you're considering leaving the industry, and you know, for right now, there's a lot of agents that are saying they're just going to bail. They're going to go back to whatever they did before. Talk to me first. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about your options, because you can still help your family and friends without being a full-time real estate pro with MLS access and, you know, rolling up your sleeves and doing all the things yourself. You still can be involved and you still can get paid a referral commission legally if you stay active. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about your options and see which one might be the best for you. But again, my cell is 713-585-5838. I'm on social medias and as a broker, and my business profiles for both, and then our website as well. So State 28 Real Estate and For Real Referrals.
Hit Kenna up. Yeah. All right, before we get out of here, a couple fun questions for you. What's your best or your favorite restaurant, and what do you order there?
Oh man, so probably Papacito's. Any right. Papa's restaurant. The Hank Del Mar, and I worked together.
Y'all worked together at Pap 2.
If anybody who ever worked at a Papa's restaurant in Texas knows exactly what Pap 2 is, but it was the Papa's seafood house on I-10 East, because we're from the east side. Okay. We both worked there for a few years, actually, when I was in high school and he was in college. We were not together then, y'all, not at all. We've only been together 14 years. but we worked together there back in the day, and man, Papa's is like military boot camp going to work at a Papa's restaurant, because I am as many years old as I am today years old and still could order in code. Like they don't play. Like you learn it and you know it, you will take it to the grave with you.
Yeah.
So any Papa's restaurant is probably my favorite, because I know their quality and they've maintained that through the years. But Papacito's, even though seafood is my favorite, so that's the irony, is that I'm a seafood lover and cruise lover. Papacito's, but the Chipotle shrimp at Papacito's. And it's not always on the menu, so there's a little bonus tip for y'all. It's not always on the menu, but they do always have it.
Oh, I love it. And the Montequilla sauce. Got to get that.
Yeah.
So good. Oh, yeah. I grew up with James Pappas, you know, growing up. So, like, Indian guys, out-of-town trips. We, you know, his dad would take us, like, the whole, you know, tribe of kids or whatever.
Oh, wow.
They're, like, trucking into Papacito's. And, yeah, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I think everybody, I really and truly, I have three children, and my oldest, my daughter's a bartender, and she's worked in the service industry for years. She was a key manager for Texas Roadhouse for several years, and she's back in our area now, but I have encouraged all three of my kids to go work at Papa's, and I think we scared them away from it because we're like, you need this. You need to understand the service industry. You will be a better tipper. You will be a better human for going to work. So, hey, shout out to Papa's. I get nothing for that, by the way. I'm just telling you that 30 plus years later, I'm like, that was a good thing that we did. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it too. I went to boot camp. It was my last meal before I went, and my first one when I came home.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like,
can't beat it.
So anyway, near and dear to my heart. All right. What's your favorite vacation you've ever been on?
Ooh, ever?
Because you go on a lot of cruises.
I mean, yeah, I do.
Dream vacation. How about that?
My kids are so rotten. Hawaii. So Hawaii was my favorite vacation ever. And it was a I'm not usually this lucky. Like, I work hard, but I'm not usually just like easily naturally lucky. Luckiest break ever can never be topped. So 2016, we went to Hawaii Christmas 2016. So it's relevant for so many reasons that we went Christmas 2016. The only reason for on our end that we did that is because Hank's best friend since preschool, it was career Air Force and was stationed there, and they were, their time was going to be coming to an end. And we'd been saying for, you know, like, oh yeah, we need to go to Hawaii while they're stationed down there, and we could stay there and not have to pay for a resort or hotel and do all the things. It'd be, you know, so much cheaper. Well, we were running out of time. He was going to get transferred. And so we canceled Christmas. Like, I returned all of our Christmas gifts. Like, we're going to Hawaii. That's your Christmas. Merry Christmas. You will love it. You will smile. And, so we get there, and unbeknownst to me, or beyond, not that I didn't know, but I hadn't connected the dots. Two things happened during our Hawaii trip, December of 2016. Number one, it was the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. So we landed in the middle of a month long, really emotional, ceremonial moment in time there in Pearl Harbor. And we're staying on base. I mean, like, we're staying on Officer Rowe with his friend and his family, where our boys are like, they get to see buildings with bullet holes still in them. And then we're going to these ceremonies. And I was shocked how emotional it was for our kids. That was like, I can't ever reproduce that. I can't. And it was just pure crazy luck. The irony of that and having nerd boys, though, is when we went to the gift shop at Pearl Harbor and Hank told them they could get one thing, anything they wanted. One of them wanted like a $400 bomber jacket. That's fair. You're a boy. You're a teenage boy. Bomber jacket. That's cool. The other one wanted a piece of an airplane that got shot down. They sell that in the gift shop, just so y'all know. And I was like, yeah, that ain't happening, bud. That is not, I'm not, no, we're not buying that. And it was like $1,000 or something. But yes, they'll sell a piece of an aircraft. I think you can buy American or Japanese. They have a lot of them. They have a lot of pieces, and they're selling them there at the gift shop. And he comes around the corner, and I'm like, why would you tell them anything they wanted? Like, that's not happening. Good times with the nerd kids. But the other coolest thing, total opportunity of a lifetime, it was the Obamas' last Christmas in office. And you may or may not recall, the Obamas spent every single Christmas holiday where? In Hawaii. So not only did my boys get to walk directly past 30 Secret Service agents and the Obama girls on the strip shopping in Waikiki, that happened. And they were like, oh my God, like, completely starstruck. That was really cool. But we were fortunate enough to get to tour Air Force One. And I cried like a baby.
Did you really?
I cried like a lunatic. I didn't even know I was that patriotic.
But you cried on the airplane.
I'm telling you, I didn't even know how patriotic I was until we got on that plane. And we're, first of all, you can only be given a tour by one of the pilots, and there's only a handful of those guys. So it's like, it's a whole thing. It's a whole experience.
Yeah.
And, but when we get to the media room on the plane, where there's a table that converts to like from a conference table to like a casket holder, and he's telling us who's flown there, and I lost it. Totally lost it. The boys are like, what is wrong with her? I'm like, oh, I'm having a moment. Oh God, it was a lot. But yeah, you can't duplicate that. We could never duplicate that trip. So for all the things we've spent money on and places we've, my kids are so spoiled. Like, I never left Texas till I was a grown adult. My kids have been all over the Caribbean. They've been to both coasts. They've been everywhere. Can never, ever duplicate that trip. And it was the things that weren't that expensive or didn't add cost to the trip that were the most, just wow. Yeah. That's
good for you. Good for your family. Good for your kids. That's fantastic.
Fun stuff.
Memories. All right. What's your favorite book, or what book are you reading right now?
All right. So, truth be told, I'm trying to write 4 books right now. So I haven't been reading as much. I've got a personal goal this year. I'm already behind on my personal goal. Thanks, Taylor, for bringing that to my attention. Yes, he's going to motivate me through this year, I feel. And I appreciate it very much. But yeah, we're in the second quarter. This is the first week of the second quarter. So I'm already behind because my goal was 1 a quarter. So I got a little catching up to do second quarter, but I'm still having a goal. And you and I have talked about it, Taylor, but to share with the group. So I am working on kind of what I talked about, my mantra, my motivation in real estate, but how to be a better buyer, how to be a better seller. And then I have the other two are a little more personal content, and I'll be sharing more on those later. But yeah,
The timing is so good because you'll get to pour into what we discussed already on the podcast, and you know you already had the concept coming up before you know what happened with the lawsuit. So anyways, the stars are aligning for you with content. Yeah, I believe that.
I hope so.
All right, what is the best advice you ever got, Kenna, and who gave it to you?
Oh gosh. That's a really tough one. probably my dad. I was a daddy's girl, I think, all of my life until I lost him. And this is going to be really simple. I don't even, probably John Wayne or somebody said it, but, okay. You know, he'd...
maybe a president that was on Air Force One.
Rather be smart than lucky.
Okay.
Every day, any day. And that's definitely proven true for me. So
I've not heard that one ever. I like that a lot.
I know a lot of people that are just, man, like golden touch, you know, what are they? The Midas touch, everything they touch is just instant gold. And I'm like, wow, what is that like? That must be amazing. I am not that. I have had to work hard for all the things, every little thing. And, but I think I'm more grateful for it because of that. And thrifty. I think if I became a millionaire tomorrow, I'd still go thrifting. I would still go to a secondhand store, Salvation Army or Goodwill or whatever, in every town that I visit. That's not my hometown, because that's like my favorite thing to do, is go see what local trash is a tourist treasure.
Yeah.
That will always be my mindset, I think, growing up the way that we did. But I'm a hard worker, and I think that I want to learn the most and share the most about anything that I'm going to be part of, because I don't expect it to come easy. So I thought that's probably it for me.
Awesome. Well, Kenna, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it. Great interview. You're fantastic. Wealth of knowledge. Got a lot to share. Can't wait to read your books when they come out. And we got to do this again. We got to come back and promote some of your books once you get them out.
I'll be here. Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
And one more time, tell people how they can get a hold of you again.
So my cell is 713-585-5838, or you can reach me through any of social medias or my websites for State 28 Real Estate, which is our traditional brokerage, or For Real Referrals, which is our new referral program for agents. So either way, give me a shout.
Thanks for listening or watching. Hit the like, subscribe, follow button, whatever. And we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Peace.